The north side, as I understand it, was taken up mostly by Z.V. Sheldon.
Sheldon, yes.
Sheldon, and right. He lived down here on where the Baptist Church is now.
Right, I understand that.
Very,
it was a nice big house, apparently, there, wasn't it?
It was a big stone house, yeah. Well, the garage is still there where he had his horse, where his horses were. That's still there. That building's still there.
I didn't know that, right.
But the main building, his house is torn down and replaced by the church. Right.
The Stockbridges, did you read Dorothy Aldridge's full-page article here in the Gazette a couple weeks ago?
Well, about those tunnels?
Yes.
Yes, well, you know, I lived right next door there, you know.
Oh, which
way? A little house just west of that, see?
Oh.
My girls were both born in that house.
Oh, sure.
And the Stockbridges, Mrs. Stockbridge, her husband passed away and she married a saloon keeper here,
mm-hmm.
and by the name of Sponsolier,
Sponsolier.
Dave Sponsolier.
Mm-hmm.
I think he run the office bar, if I'm not mistaken.
Office bar?
Yeah. The nickel plate was run by Big Mike McGuire.
Yes, right.
And I used to work for him.
Right.
When I was a kid, I used to open up there about 5 o'clock in the morning.
Where was the office bar?
Bar was just this side of that brick building that's right on the corner of 26th and Colorado Avenue, right next to it. You know,
okay.
It's kind of a vacant.
Which is called the Will Building.
Well, that was a wooden building. Nickel plate was right next to that. See.
Nickel plate. Then
nickel
where
plate
was office
saloon,
bar?
So.
Was the office bar this side of
the
that?
The office bar was this side of that. Then,
okay. Right.
And then there was the Columbine.
Mm-hmm.
And there was three fellows that owned that. And then there was Gleason. And then there was Hopper and Zobel. Mm-hmm. I knew Hopper, he was my next door neighbor. And then there's the High Water run by Davy Reese.
Mm-hmm.
And he had been an old pugilist, you know, in his younger days. He was actually punch drunk. You know. But he run the High Water. And then next to that was the Hoffman Bar,
Hoffman
by Barn Hames.
Right, yes.
Now, Barn
Hames.
Were there
two buildings or one building there? I keep hearing that there was the Hoffman House.
There was a Al Pirine Saloon, too. Al Pirine.
Right.
Yeah.
But was
now,
there two Hoffman?
He married one of the Stockbridges. He married Nell Stockbridge.
Mm-hmm. Was there two Hoffman houses or one? Two Hoffman buildings or one?
There was only one Hoffman building.
And that was the corner,
and that
wasn't
was right
it?
On the corner.
Yes, okay. Byron Hames.
Byron Hames, that's right. And he run it was the classiest saloon, and it was all mahogany
oh,
bar.
Yeah.
You
mm-hmm.
know, and,
mm-hmm.
and he went around, you'd think he was the king of Colorado City. He had a Prince Albert coat on and a stovepipe hat. A swallowtail coat, you know.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, that's the way those fellows used to dress. Well, of course, they made most of their money when gambling was in.
Yes, right.
When was in full swing, you know, mm-hmm. in Colorado mm-hmm. City.
Yes, I'm aware of that.
And then, of course, they outlawed gambling.
Yeah.
Around, I don't know just when they outlawed gambling, but then then George Burchill, he took over about 1900. Mm-hmm. As chief of the fire department and city marshal.
Mm-hmm.
City
about 1900.
About 1900. Yeah.
Where did he come from? Do you know?
Well, he come out here. Now I couldn't say just what state he come from, but he was a niece of he was related to this fellow that run that owned that built that Templeton.
Oh.
Of Templeton.
He was related to the Templeton.
To the Templetons. And
Mrs.
Huff was a neighbor of ours when we lived up there near about 2519 West Pike's Peak. She
mm-hmm.
lived right in that on the corner there.
Yes.
And that was the old Templeton home.
Yes.
Just
right.
across the alley from where that food store is there now on the corner, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes, right.
And that was the old Templeton home. And Templeton mm-hmm. built that building. The Templeton block was built in 91, I think it was.
Yes, I think so.
I think it was built in 91.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Templeton Gap out there, I don't know whether that was named after Templeton or not.
Mm-hmm.
But he had several daughters, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether he had any son or not, but this Pop Smith, it used to run a pop stand down around 12th and Kiowa. Mm-hmm. Married one of the daughters. And then there was Bob, I forget the names now, I know who they are, but still and then mm-hmm. married another daughter.
Well, where did Birdsall come in, do you know?
Well, Birdsall, he come in here, and he was a nephew of this Mrs. Huff. Uh-huh. Mrs. Huff, who was the daughter of Templeton. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know just what the relationship okay. was, but he was a nephew, and he went to work for the Star Grocery there on the corner of in the Erickson Building. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the
Templeton Building.
I'm getting there mixed up with another building. Now,
I understood that Birdsall had a grocery store in Denver.
Oh, he never had a run a grocery store.
Well, not here, but in Denver. One old timer said that where he put his money when he made his deposits was in a Denver bank that was connected with a little grocer that he had up there. When he made the collections around the ladies of the night,
from the ladies of the night, but the gentlemen of the day. Now, gambling was going on, see, yes. against the law, of course. Yes. But Birdsall was getting his percentage out of it. Mm-hmm. Of course, there all those characters sure. passed away, so it doesn't make much difference anyhow. No. And you know, my father was police magistrate in wow. old Colorado City, mm-hmm. and we had quite a few votes, a large family. And Birdsall used to, of course, he was a politician. You know, after he'd always come up, you know, especially after election. After he won the election, he'd come up with a pot plant from some greenhouse, you know, up mm-hmm. to the house with it, you know. And they got to talking about Gregory, James R. Gregory. Mm-hmm. He had been elected chief of police of Colorado City. Uh-huh. And they found out that he was knocking down, see. And how they found that out was through a... Kelly was an alderman. They called him the watchdog of the city council. He was almost illiterate. He could hardly spell his own name. But he was a councilman from the south side of Colorado City. Mm-hmm. And... He used to get up there, you know, and tell them just how the bear eat the cabbage.
Yes.
And he said they had about four blocks of sewerage over on the south side, mm-hmm. but they didn't have this just about two blocks more to go, you know, see, to cover all of the south side of the sewerage. Mm-hmm. And he said he got up and said, spoke at election, you know, his campaign for re-election. And he said, if I'm elected, he says, councilman from the south side, he says there'll be a beginning and an ending to that sewer on the south side. In other words, they complete the two blocks. Yeah. They were not completed before. That's what that was his pledge, you know, if he got back in office.
Uh-huh. When would that have been?
Huh?
Well, about what years would those have been?
About 19...
10 or so?
Yes, about... 1910, 11, about mm-hmm. that time. Mm-hmm. And now, you see, he went down on that row, see, mm-hmm. Tenderloin District, and he got the names of all these women, see. Kelly done that, see.
Yeah.
And then he compared those with the books that my father had, and mm-hmm. as a police magistrate, right. he had all those books, mm-hmm. and they levied fines from these women, you know, each month, you see. Yeah. Well, all the names are not turned in, see. And James R. Gregory was chief of police, and he hadn't turned the names in, see. Mm-hmm. And he was collecting, levying fines from these women, but he wouldn't turn the money in.
I see.
So they say they call him knocking down, see.
Yeah.
Well, anyhow, he made the accusation in city council that Gregory was taking this money. And so they called Gregory up to the city councilor, first meeting they had after that, and ask him if that was true. He says, gentlemen, he says, that's the truth. He says, you've caught me. He says, I'm guilty. He says, I'm guilty as I didn't turn these names in. Well, they thought my father was in on the deal, mm-hmm. see, because he was police magistrate. Yeah, yeah. But my father wouldn't take a dime that wasn't coming to him, you know. He was, he had been a policeman in Omaha before he ever came out here, and he had, he knew something about police.
Shenanigans.
That's the reason he got the job as a police magistrate. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He understood the law as far as the police department went mm-hmm. you know. But they found out he was innocent, you know.
Yes.
He didn't have a thing to do with it. Mm-hmm. But anyhow, they told Gregory, well, said, you can hand in your credentials. You're through. So that was his badge and his club. That was his credential.
Right.
He handed in, and he was. So he was. Then they appointed a man by the name of Ed Wolf as chief of police.
Well, what you're saying is he had a police chief and then a marshal. Was Virgil was the marshal?
Well, that was in 1900. He served as city marshal and also chief of the fire department.
Right. Okay.
He served in two capacities at one time.
What was the relationship between chief of police and marshal? Who would have made him the marshal?
Well, the city council.
Okay.
It'd be up to city council to do that, see. You see.
Right. Then, how did he get, I can never quite figure out how he managed to end up mayor of Colorado Springs.
Oh, well, that's some years later, you see. We had a commission form of government, you see.
Yes.
And the people got fed up on that commission form of government, you know, and anyhow, there was when they paved these streets, they paved the arterial boulevards, which are considered Colorado Avenue, and Cascade, Nevada, and Platt. These Platt Avenue. They paved all those streets about the same time. Well, they were going to pave this, they were going to put this, have an 8-inch concrete base with a 2-inch bitumen surface, you see, but on the other streets, you know, some the other streets are different. The soil formation was different. They're going to put in a crushed rock base with an asphalt surface, and somehow they were getting a graph from one or the other, from Warren-eyed people or something, you know. But anyhow, it came up in the council, and I didn't understand it myself. But anyhow, the people said, we'll just take out this council, this commission form of government, and put in the city, council, city manager form of government. Mm-hmm. So that's when the commission form went out. That was Mayor Thomas. They called him a little Kaiser during the First World War. You know, they called him a little Kaiser. Right. But he was a tough little Englishman.
Yeah,
Charlie Thomas. But I went to work on the fire department when he was mayor of Colorado Springs.
Mm-hmm. And Birdsall was after that?
Birdsall was before. Oh, Birdsall was, yeah, Birdsall was after that. He was mayor after that, see, because he went in, when the new form of government went in, went in as one of the members of the council.
Council, and then became mayor later, I guess.
Yeah, under the city.
All right, so he was a councilman, and then the council would have voted him as mayor? Is that the way?
Well, yes, that's right. They appoint the mayor.
All right, that's how it happens.
He's elected on the council,
then the councilman
elected, and then the council appoints the.
That clears that up. I couldn't figure out.
Appoints the mayor.
I couldn't quite figure out why Colorado Springs would vote Birdsall the mayor, and they didn't. They voted it. He was elected a councilman, and then the council decided he was the best man.
Yeah, that's right.
Somebody said he was a pretty impressive-looking man, and that's why
he looked
like he ought to be mayor.
And he was the smoothest politician in this county. Well, anyhow, I'm getting ahead of my story. He came up with this pot plant, and they were telling about the dismissal of Gregory, you know.
Yes.
How he lost out as
police chief.
As chief of the police department.
Mm-hmm.
Why, Birdsall spoke up. Now, at that time, Birdsall was sheriff of the county.
Mm-hmm.
He was sheriff of the county at that time. He'd just been reelected for sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
And, he spoke up and said, Birdsall did, he says, well, that's worth $1,000 a month. Mm-hmm. That job is worth $1,000 a month. And, of course, that was big money in those days. You know, it was
a lot of
money now, but it was big money that time.
Not bad now.
Well, you see, my father spoke up, you know, as much experience as he'd had, and in politics and one thing or another, it's a funny thing that he couldn't see through that. He says, I don't understand George, he says, why that is. He says his salary is only $125 a month. He says, how could he be getting $1,000 a month? And he looked at my mother, you know, and I was just a kid, you know. I seen him winking at my mother, you know. He said, yes, he didn't lose it. He didn't tell how he got it. Yes. But that's how he got it, because he was getting a percentage of this. Now, when the gambling was going on, see, I was working in this saloon, see, as a kid, you know. And they sent down a dumb waiter with the order. And then there's a tube there, speaking tube.
Sure.
They'll speak to you and tell you just what order they wanted. Mm-hmm. You'd write it down, and then you'd put it on the dumbwaiter, and they'd go up there. And you knew they were gambling up there, but you didn't know who was gambling. You didn't know who was gambling, see. But it was going on behind closed doors. And that's how Burchill happened to... They told about him in the paper, about how he was, when he was sheriff, how he was getting so much, being allowed so much to feed these prisoners as sheriff of the county, and how he was cutting down and seeing them for less money and one thing or another. But the people kept putting him in office.
Right. What were the politics over here? Was he a Democrat or did...
He's a Republican.
He was, Burchill was.
Burchill was a Republican, okay. Yes.
I could never figure out when Stockbridge was so controversial. Apparently the Iris newspaper was out after his scalp, and his political enemies said they were going to burn down his building, and they did.
Oh, you mean Stockbridge?
Stockbridge.
Oh, Stockbridge, yes.
Yes. And I never got a picture of the politics on this side of town during those days.
You see, that was going back even before my time.
Mm-hmm.
See?
Yeah.
When they burned down his house, that was before I was born. You know?
Right. But even then, how did the politics of this side of town kind of evolve? What was the strongest?
Well, of course, the liquor. There's the wets and the dries. See?
Okay.
Those that believe in promoting the saloons, one thing or another, and those that
did not.
The church people who wanted the town to go dry.
Sure.
See? And so this Stockbridge, he run a wholesale liquor establishment.
Yes.
Diagonally across where O'Brien is, where that printing establishment is now.
Mm-hmm.
Right there, he run a wholesale liquor store. Mm-hmm. Right there at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And of course he made enemies, because he was running a liquor store.
Okay. Okay. Were the Republicans wets? Or did it come down to Republican Democrat?
Well, they were split, you know.
Okay,
the saloons, you know, they put up a minister to run for mayor, and the name was Duncan Lamont, you know.
Oh, yes.
He come from Scotland, you know, where even the minister took a drink, you know.
Yes.
And he says, I don't believe in prohibition.
Yes.
He says, I've always taught temperance, you know. Mm-hmm. Temperance.
Yes.
But he says we always had
whiskey
in the house. He says, but we believed in moderation. We didn't believe in it. But anyhow, they thought that they were doing something, putting one over by putting up a minister to run for, but he was defeated.
He
was defeated. Duncan Lamont was defeated.
Did he end up in the legislature of the state? I read a Frank Hall history, and Lamont showed up in the state legislature, and I wonder if he ever got to the state capitol in later years, up in the 90s.
I don't know. I never heard of him being in the...
I know his wife was active in the WCTU. Her name showed up in the Christian Trempas.
Lamont's
wife
yes.
did, and I knew, but I run across a Lamont, and I'm always double-checking names, because some of them are the
same
name.
He's a very conscientious man, you know.
Yes.
He didn't...
Mm-hmm.
But the saloon people put him up. And that was the funny part.
Oh, the saloon people put him up.
They put him up.
They
put him up, you know, because they thought that would he would carry a large church vote, because he was a minister.
of her diary.
He said he didn't believe in prohibition, but these other people were more on the prohibition type, you know. They wanted...
There were several Scotsmen over here, weren't there? I guess other Scotsmen here. Did you know anything about O'Connell, who owned that Argyle building, right?
The Argyle. I know where the Argyle building is,
right.
Yes.
Well, he was a Scotsman named O'Connell. And
O'Connell, that's...
And I think...
Now, that's getting back before my time.
And I think Pearl Scott was Scotch, too. And I was interested. I once asked this because when I knew Duncan Lamont was Scotch, and Pearl Scott was Scotch, and I knew O'Connell was Scotch.
But there's Lamont. Lamont, you know, his brother. You know, when this big... I can't think of his name now. He was one of our leading bankers, the international bankers.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know who he
is? Halbert?
Huh?
Halbert?
No, not locally. I mean nationally.
Yes.
All
right. You mean Morgan or...
John Pierpont Morgan is who I was trying to think about. Now, John Pierpont Morgan, when he died... A man by the name of Lamont took his place, and that was a brother of this Duncan Lamont, so I understand.
I'll be darned.
The brother of this Duncan Lamont. Yes. That's the way I get it.
That's interesting, yes.
John Pierpont Morgan. You know,
were there any Welshmen that over here?
Huh?
Were there any Welshmen on this side of town that you ever knew?
Welshmen? Yes, I might have.
I just wondered. I'm descended from a long line of Welshmen. My grandfather homesteaded east of Kiowa, Colorado.
Oh, he did?
And so my father was one of five children. And then two of my uncles came here to Colorado Springs. My father died, so they took me in here. So I spent part of my childhood here in Colorado Springs because my mother had three girls and myself. And when my father died in Pueblo, I was born in Englewood, Colorado.
In Englewood, out of Denver.
Out of Denver, but they were Welsh.
Welsh descent.
Welsh descent, and I've always...
My mother and father both come from Ireland, you know.
Yes,
from Dublin.
Right.
Dublin. Now, the wife, her parents both come from Switzerland. From Switzerland, from Bern, Switzerland.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Capital of Switzerland. Yeah. Where they both come from. Oh. And they settle in the San Luis Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where she was raised, and so she... They were on a large... Well, they had three or four ranches over there. He had run about 600 head of cattle.
Mm-hmm.
And then he died. He died. He was in bad health. And then the family moved over to Colorado City, and then they opened up a livery barn.
Mm-hmm.
They bought out Jack Ridenour. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether you ever heard of Jack Ridenour.
No.
Run a livery barn here.
Yes.
Right across the street from the Bancroft School.
Okay, all right. And then McDonald and Huff had that later?
McDonald and Huff had the building just west of that.
Just west of it. Were they in the livery business or feed or what?
They were in the McDonald and Huff?
Yes.
Yes, they were in the livery business.
Also in the livery.
Yeah, they were in the, McDonald and Huff were in the coal and feed business.
Coal and feed, okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Feed business.
And then this side was a livery stable.
Just this side of the livery stable was... this side of McDonald and Huff. That had been Beale's undertaking party before that, year before that.
Okay.
But that was where the livery barn was. Mm-hmm. And my mother come over here and she bought out that livery barn from Jack Ridenour.
Hmm. When was that?
That was about 1910, I think.
1910. If I recall, you came here in 1893.
In 1893, right. I come to Colorado City in 1893 from Denver.
Yes, I understand that was during the Depression and your
during the Depression. That's when Coxey's army went to Washington.
Yes. Well, was that livery, the Ridenours, did he have it when that fire burned and they killed all the horses?
Yeah, he owned it at that time. Ridenour and Ed Rediker. Ed Rediker.
Mm-hmm.
He was after, Ed Rediker was afterwards chief of police of Colorado City.
Ah, yes.
But those 43 head of horses burned, and it was a sorry sight, you know. I went over there from school, and all those horses were burned. Well, my brother was there the night before at the fire. He was a volunteer fireman, and whenever there's a fire occurred anywhere, he was always there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he ruined a good suit of clothes there. And, and the mayor, who was I.A. Foote, you know, he was the mayor of Colorado City at that time, and he was a dry.
Yes. I.A. Foote.
I.A. Foote. Ira A. Foote.
Did he? They build us Foote Building. Was that his building in Colorado Springs somewhere? There's a Foote Building. It seems.
Well, his son was manager of Penny Store.
Okay.
Foote. Right. That was Byron Foote.
All right.
Was manager of that store, and then Mark Foote, the other brother, had been a manager of the Penny Store in Hudson, Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
He and I were boys on the same track team together, and we won the cup, you know,
yes,
the same year.
Yes.
And that's the only no Foote Building. I don't know. If
well, I just wondered. I there, many well,
what
names.
What Foote Building are you referring to? Is
well, I just building? I've seen a building. I thought up on Tejon that had Foote on it. And I thought maybe it was, again, some of those names, when it's the same name and a little bit unusual like that, I always
I used
perk
to know
up my ears.
Because I was here on the fire department, you
yes,
know, and
right.
I knew nearly all the buildings, you know,
right.
The name of these buildings and the
sure.
numbers of the buildings.
But there's, maybe I'm wrong, it's something, that name hits a bell about a building and I can't place it. Because I keep trying to sort out Colorado City's history and the West Side's history from Colorado Springs' history, you know.
I see.
And many people, of course, came here, and either they had important things in the Springs or their children did. But I keep wanting to go back and find their roots here because, as I say, everything that's ever been written about Colorado City has been part of something else. Now we're writing things about Colorado City by itself.
Colorado City itself.
Itself.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the West Side later. But you know.
But what I can understand from this article that this the Stockbridge was really the first mayor of Colorado City. Is that a fact?
Yes, because Colorado City was a city, but until statehood, 1876, until we became a state,
that's
then
right.
After the state, then you had to incorporate, and it wasn't until 1887 that Colorado City asked to be a city under the state law, and so that's why he was elected mayor. Now it had mayors before, but the town had not. It was part
it
of the territory.
It wasn't an incorporated.
Well,
town, is it?
Because, but it was not under state law because we didn't even have a state. You see,
it was a territory.
We had a territory, so
until
under territorial law, it was a city. And
until August 1st, 1876.
That was state. Yes, that's when Colorado became a state, but it wasn't until. Colorado City didn't get around to asking to be recognized as a incorporated city until about 1887.
1887.
And that's when Stockbridge then became the first elected mayor in the incorporated city under state law. But there were mayors before him in an unincorporated city, and there were mayors here in Colorado City before there was even a state. So that's why he was the first elected mayor at that time. But legally, this was a town, of course, a city, all the way back to 1859. There wasn't any question about it. But it was just that they never applied. Just like today, just like the Broadmoor, if it wanted to, it could become incorporated. But it's
incorporated.
Not incorporated. And so then if you incorporate under state law, you have to hold elections and a mayor and everything. So he was the first elected mayor in an incorporated city under state law.
Under state law,
right.
I see.
And that's why that came up that way. But it's very interesting to me. I gave Dorothy Aldridge most of that history, and I had found some of it in Frank Hall's history of Colorado.
Frank Hall.
He was on the first, I think, a judge. And he wrote in 1890 to 1895, four big fat volumes. They were very early history. And under El Paso County, the only steel engraving sketch of an important person was a picture of Stockbridge. Palmer wasn't in it, even though he'd been here 20 years.
I see.
So, and it said then...
And founded Colorado Springs.
That's right. So Colorado City was pretty important. And I'm kind of enjoying this because a lot of people are trying to recreate the history here, but they all seem to want to start with Palmer. And I just say there was a decade of very, very important things that went on here, you know, before that. And
before that, a lot
of the history that Colorado Springs never lived through, the Indian history and the Civil War and the capital here and the county seat, and even Haw and Augusta Tabor sold lots here in 1860 en route to California Gulch.
Oh, they did.
Leadville. Well, because there was Ute Pass. The main reason was that Ute Pass was one way you could get a wagon up into the high country.
It was an opening through the mountains.
An opening through the mountains. And so it made it, and it was also halfway between the Platte and the Arkansas. And since many of the pioneers came out those two water routes, then this was sort of halfway point.
And well, it's at the confluence, you see, of the Monument and the Fountain Kibo Creeks.
That's correct. Right there. And so because of that, this was a good place to build a town, to get into the mountains to seek gold. And it was also at the landmark, Pikes Peak. Everybody knew Pikes Peak.
So
it was founded at the same time of almost as Denver, Auroria, and a little bit later, Canyon City.
Auroria now was, instead of Aurora,
Auroria was a
rival city of Denver to start.
That's
with.
Right.
A rival city right. of Denver.
And if the founders, Anthony Bott, if they had found gold closer than Fairplay, if they'd found Cripple Creek, then I think the town would have boomed. But the other thing that made a decline set in was the Civil War, because what happened was that the border states, very few people came through, very few people came up from the Arkansas River at that time. In other words, the Arkansas River became very unsafe. And so the wagon trains increased up the Platte River to Denver, and it decreased into Colorado City coming up to Arkansas. And then they didn't find any gold. And then in 1862, Denver men came down and stole, as we say, the capital. So it lost the capital. It didn't find gold close, and it lost the traffic up the Arkansas River. And that's why it went downhill until 1871. And then of course here comes Colorado Springs with the railroad, and it began to build up again.
To build up, yes.
But it was also the seat of agriculture. My own research: the first flour mill in all of Colorado Territory was on Fountain Creek, right here around 25th Street.
Well, the first flour mill I think was built by a man by the name of Flanagan.
I think so. Yes.
Well, this.
Go ahead and help me. Is that right? What'd you do for him?
Well, I went to work to start with digging dandelions as a kid, you know, see?
Yes.
And then I started watering the lawns and then mowing the lawns. Mm-hmm. And I worked for him from 1905, 1906, 1907.
Yes.
General Palmer. Mm-hmm. But you see, that was the year after he built his castle. He completed his castle in 1904.
Did the stone for the castle come over here from about 31st Street, that mesa up there? Somebody told me that the quarry that they built, got the stone for Glen Eyre, came from...
From Brown Ridge, the second ridge over.
Second ridge over.
The second ridge over. Mm. Because I lived over there, and I know that the stone was hauled. That was back in 1902, and they started hauling that stone right by the house I lived in.
Hmm. Which way did they carry it?
They took it down 26th Street and then out 30th Street, out to Glen Eyre.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had stone cutters from Scotland to cut this stone.
Oh, more Scotchmen, huh?
That's right. Scotland, yeah.
Stone cutters from there, huh? Very good.
That's, I know that quite a few, I don't know whether it all came from there or not, but
no,
I noticed that number
of yes.
loads are, that's the horse and buggy days, you know, they had these wagons that carried about 3 yards of rock, you know.
Yes, uh-huh.
So it took quite a while, quite a few loads of rock in order to build that. I don't know whether they had the stone, the cutters right there where they blasted the stone out, or whether they had to take the stone up. I believe they had to take the stone up to Glen Eyre. And then
it's a bright, lighter stone.
Well, it's covered with a...
Hello.
Right. It's covered with a moss, kind of a moss-covered rock. Mm-hmm, you notice mm-hmm, that? Mm-hmm. That and that second ridge, that's a sandstone. The first was a limestone. Well, the second was a sandstone. And that's where the rock came from.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But that cost him $500,000 to build that castle at that time.
Wow.
And he was, when I went to work for him, he was about 70 years of age.
Huh.
That is 10.
It's getting along then, yes.
Okay, you can sign
that. And then I went to work down here at the shop, the middle of the shop.
It was a 50 cents tax.
Worked as a machinist there from 1907, 1908, 1909.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Hmm. But you see, the town is, I knew quite a few of these old timers that come here, Indian fighters among
there.
Any
map or
anything?
What about,
could
you tell me a little bit about Mr. Bott, what you can remember of him personally, what kind of man he was, and Anthony Bott?
Anthony Bott, well, he was a... I know that he came here in search of gold to begin with.
Yes.
You know, and they went up on the Terrial to start with, looking for gold.
Now,
and then, of course, that played out.
Here,
and then they come down here, and he and Sheldon were together, I believe. He and Z.V. Sheldon were together, and then they decided that Sheldon would take this side of the creek, and he'd take the other side of the creek, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And,
what kind of person was he? Did you know him? I understood your sister worked
my
for
sister,
him, too.
My sister worked for him.
What kind of man was he? Can you describe him? I've never talked to anyone who ever knew him
personally.
Well,
of course I didn't. I was just a kid at the time, you know, see. And my sister, she could tell you all about him because she worked for him. But they made a number of trips to Europe and different parts of the world, you know. They traveled quite a bit, and she was in charge. They built a house up here on 22nd and Collard Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And a beautiful house, you know.
Filling station's there now.
And there's it's not a filling station. There was a filling station, and they tore that down.
It's Carl Sales place.
And now it's just a used car lot.
Yes.
It's right across the street from the Dairy Queen.
Yes, okay.
Right across the street, Dairy Queen. That was Bott's house.
House, right. Well, what did he make his money in? Land?
Well, land, that's where he made his money, out of land over in the south side.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he was the one that promoted the building of these mills over there.
Yes. Huh.
And that was on his land, you might say.
Mm-hmm. Well, was he a pretty impressive man?
How did
people describe him to you? Was he, impressive politician, or was he a businessman?
Well, I don't know.
Or?
He wasn't. He wasn't much of a politician. No, mm-hmm. I'd say he was. One of the early pioneers. That's all I can say.
Did he have any descendants that you know of?
Not that I know of. Yeah. They didn't have any heirs.
Mm.
His wife was part Indian.
Oh yes, yeah.
And I remember on one occasion they're having quite a few depredation from these Indians, you know.
Yes.
Out here along Sand Creek, you know.
Right.
From that tribe out that way. I don't know what tribe that was.
Mm-hmm.
But they called for volunteers here in Colorado City at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And this Colonel Chivington was his name, and he had been a preacher, mind you,
mm-hmm.
a minister. And he rode up and down with his horse, you know, in front of his the. They were all mounted, of course,
mm-hmm.
and he made the talk, you know. He said that the Indians were, the only good Indian was a dead Indian. That's what those old-timers believe.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said that the nets made lice, you see. That was part of his talk, that if they were permitted to, even the children, he wanted to rub them out entirely. Well, now that was no Christian. That wasn't a Christian act,
right,
you know.
Right.
Even though the Indians might be they were barbarians, but we were supposed to be civilized.
Sure, sure.
And to go out there and kill those Indians, that was just nothing but murder.
Yes.
Nothing but murder.
Mm-hmm.
See, well, Anthony Bott was one of those that enlisted to go out there with him.
Mm-hmm.
See, and of course he was kind of in sympathy with the Indians, even though he went out there, but
mm-hmm.
His wife was half Indian, as I say, you know, and he saw this Indian boy crawl underneath the bed in the teepee, you know, and he went in there, and instead of shooting the boy, he brought the boy out. He said that he was going to raise that boy, and he told members that when after they massacred most everybody else. Mm-hmm. I don't think there was a living Indian there, but this Indian that he brought out, see, from this teepee. And he says, I intend to adopt this boy, and I'm bringing him back to Colorado City with me. Mm-hmm. Well, nothing was said, but of course they were bitter against the Indians, you know, regardless. And one morning, on their way back here to Colorado City, after the battle, a shot rang out about 6 o'clock in the morning. They just got up and were eating breakfast. And this boy fell dead. Well, Bott made the statement at that time. He drew his revolver and he says, he didn't know where the shot come from, you know, and he said, I'll give $100 to a man that'll tell me who fired that shot. And no one would tell him. They probably knew who fired the shot. But
how long did he live, Mr. Bott?
I was living in Colorado Springs at the time that his last days in Colorado City. I was living over in Colorado Springs at that time. So I don't know just how old Bott was at that time when he passed away. His wife passed away first, and then he finally passed away. Mm-hmm. But
he was quite a man. Huh?
Yeah, he was quite a man. See. But he was a promoter too, you know. He allowed those mills to come in and build over there, the old Philadelphia Reduction Refining Plant, and he gave them the land to build a mill on, you know. And then that was in 1906, the old Philadelphia Reduction Refining Plant, and later on the Standard Mill in 1900. And then they built the short line railroad about that time, 1900, completed in 1901. And the old Telluride Mill, where the Cycle Mill was later, and then the Portland Mill were all built at the same time, same years. That short line was one of the, cost more per mile than most any other road ever built, I believe, except the Moffat Road. The Moffat was a mountain road. So.
What did, I've heard just stories about Palmer coming over here and so on. His attitude toward Old Cara City and some of the men that were prominent in the Springs coming
well,
over
he
here.
Well, he knew quite a few of the old timers here in Colorado City. Sure. Palmer did, you know. And he was friendly with some of these saloon keepers.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, he was supposed to be against
drinking
and one thing or another. He wouldn't permit a saloon in Colorado Springs. But they had clubs where they'd get plenty to drink.
Yeah, clubs, yes.
And I know that when he was, after he was thrown from his horse out there in Glen Eyrie, I worked for him. A year after that, he was hurt, you know, in 1906. He was hurt in 1906, and I worked for him in 1907. And every day, no, about every other day, or we'll say twice a week, this Henry Coby and his wife used to drive out there in his carriage to see General Palmer. Now, he was a saloon keeper. He come here and opened up a saloon in Colorado City in 1859. Now, why would he be such a close friend of General Palmer? I didn't see the connection there, you know.
How about Penrose and Tutt? Were they ever noted for being over here, spending any time over here, or getting to know people? They started the Colorado Philadelphia Mill.
Yeah, they built the mill. Of course, that was, you see, originally Penrose come from Philadelphia. That's the reason they call it the Philadelphia Reduction Refining Plant, because he really financed the mill.
Yes.
He not Tutt.
McNeil.
Tutt had, but McNeil.
Yes.
Charlie McNeil and Penrose financed the mill. The reason that McNeil was in on it, McNeil was a metallurgist. Mm-hmm. He was an expert metallurgist. Mm-hmm. And he opened an assay office up there shortly after they opened up Cripple Creek, and he got acquainted with Penroller.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, later on, they took all the assays at his office, you know, and they knew exactly what those mines were running, mm-hmm, better than the mine owners themselves.
Okay.
Later on, you know, why they treated this ore by this custom ore from these different mines, mm-hmm, over here at the Standard Mill and the Philadelphia Reduction Refining Plant. They treated that ore there. Well, they built a large reservoir over there, and all the tailings was going into that reservoir, see.
Mm.
And I heard some of those fellows that I knew personally say that they were letting high grade go through the tailings into that reservoir. And I thought there's something wrong. Well, they Merkman remarked about it. They said, why is this high grade is going through here? Well, Joe Rice, he was one of the shift foremen at that time. I knew his boys, both his boys, but I didn't know Joe Rice. But mm-hmm, anyhow, he was a shift foreman. He said, now, if you value your jobs, keep your mouth shut. So they didn't say a thing, you know. They kept still because they didn't want to lose their jobs. But anyhow, when the mill closed down then in 1913,
mm-hmm,
they didn't tear down the melt room, and they built cyanide tanks,
mm-hmm,
see, and they had treated all that ore before with the chlorination process,
mm-hmm,
and but they didn't get all the values out of the rock, you see, yes, out of the ore. And then they run some of that tailings through the cyanide process later, and they got more of the values out, yes, of the rock, out of the tailings, you know.
Hmm.
But anyhow, they went to work, and they put in a conveyor belt, and they put in a large hopper right near this reservoir that they built, see. And I was over there. I was driving one of their teams there for a while, and they just getting anybody that they could get, you know, just to work there, and I was driving a team. And we had these Fresnos, you know, that one man could handle, you know, mm-hmm, you dip up so much sand, you know, mm-hmm, and bring it over this hopper and then dump it, and then go back and get another load, see.
Mm-hmm.
You know what a Fresno is, don't you? One of these yeah, hand things, it's horse-drawn, you know.
Oh, okay, yes.
And they didn't have any wheelers there. They had wheelers earlier, you know, when they're excavating for the mill. But every bit of that tailings went into that hopper and went up to the mill. And it was treated by the cyanide process.
Mm.
That was after 1913, see,
huh,
after the mill closed down.
Mm.
And it was dismantled. The only thing they didn't dismantle was this melt room, yeah, and then they built those cyanide tanks where they treated the cyanide process, you see. Well, you can see they turned out gold bricks, so. But anyhow, Sponsalier was living there in that brick house where Stockbridge's house is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I lived next door there,
mm-hmm,
for a number of years. And, this old man that run this station, number two station, electric station. There is nothing, yeah, but there's a machinery there now, but there's no electric station there. Mm-hmm. There's substation B, it was.
Yes.
There was substation A and substation B.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was in substation B, and he would convert this from 6,600 down to 220 and 210, mm-hmm, for the use of,
yeah,
for people living, having residences, you know, that wanted 110 volts, and those 220 would take care of those streetcars that went up and down the street, 220, yeah, volts. But anyhow, they went right down this alley. That's every day, that's every few days, they'd go down this alley. They looked like a couple of old prospectors, you know, with sawed-off shotguns. And Johnson, this is the man that run the substation, he said to Sponsalier, that man that lived in Sponsalier's house, I mean in Stockbridge's house,
mm-hmm,
and who had married Mrs. Stockbridge,
mm-hmm,
at the time. He says, Dave, he says, what are those old prospectors going down this alley for every day? He says, don't you know who they are? He says, no. He says, well, they're taking the gold bricks over to the depot to be shipped to the Mint in Denver. And there they were, you know, and they were going down the alley, so not to attract attention.
That'd been when?
And
when would that have been?
That was along about
1915 or so?
Along about that time. Yeah. You see, it's following when the mill shut down.
Yeah, after.
The mill shut down in 13.
Okay.
Well, that's follow that, you see. Well, then finally these mine owners went broke. You didn't know why they went broke. You can just put two and two together and find out why they went broke. Hmm. They had an ore, a man over there to check that, but then I don't think they checked it very close. Because anyhow, these mine owners went broke and they didn't know why, but a lot of that high grade that should have gone into the mine owners' pockets was going into that reservoir and then was treated after the mill closed down.
Well, what was the attitude toward Penrose and Tutt? Were they very well known during those years?
They were well known and respected, you know. Mm-hmm. But they'd had that strike back in 1903, see?
Yes.
And they had shipped these miners out of Cripple Creek.
Yeah.
Via the side door Pullman route, or I rode the side door Pullmans in France during the war. But these guys put them in stock cars and shipped them out of Cripple Creek and told them never to come back to Cripple Creek.
Yeah.
They belonged to the Western Federation of Miners. Mm-hmm. Of course, that was the union organization. But they told never to come back to Cripple Creek. I knew one fellow that worked over at the Portland Mill when I was there, and he said he had six children, and he said he had had his own home in Cripple Creek at the time, and he was put in a stock car and shipped out 60 miles east of town here, told never to come back to Cripple Creek. He says, but I come back to Colorado City. And then he went to work at the Portland Mill. But it shows you the way those miners were treated, you know, that time. But
Do you recall Penrose or Tutt ever showing up over here to side town for anything?
I never knew Tutt. I've seen Penrose on different occasions. I've been as close to him as I have to you.
Mm-hmm.
I never conversed with him, only once. I was out in the canyon there once, and we had a dog, you know, and he wanted to know what breed of dog that was. Mm-hmm. He was interested in dogs, you know, and he was coming down the canyon with another dog, and that's the only time I ever talked to Penrose, because he was interested in dogs, you know. Yeah. But I will say that even though they had labor troubles at that time, that Penrose done a lot for Colorado Springs.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Sure.
He made enemies.
Oh, yeah.
That's true. But then now you take that Broadmoor Hotel. That was incorporated. And they sold stock to businessmen, Colorado Springs. I know that one firm, you know, Perkins and Scherer, you know, they both put in $5,000 into that deal. And it kept going down, down, down. Wasn't making money. And finally it went into the hands of the receiver. And when the smoke blew over, it went from the Broadmoor Hotel Company into the El Pomar, which was Penrose. And there was a few on the inside that still were on the inside, but those fellows that when it finally went broke, went under, why, the stockholders were all out.
Yeah.
And then Penrose, he made a trip to I think he made a trip to Paris at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And he done a very, very nice thing then. He took it over, see. Well, since that time, that Broadmoor has made money all the time.
Yeah.
Now, they must have had two sets of books. One's for the stockholders, and one's for...
Did your sister remember about Mr. Bott? What did she do? Was she kind of secretary and a companion and try to take care of his...
Well, he run a real estate office up here where he sold, you know...
Where was that?
Where was that?
That was in the 2400 block.
Really?
Yeah, he was in the 2400 block. He ran a real estate office there. Bot did for years.
What was the name of it? Do you recall
well,
the name of the?
I don't recall. I remember seeing them in there, but I couldn't tell you what they. There was. Let's see. I think he was in with two or three other businessmen there.
Where was it? What?
It was right, just about the middle of the block. I couldn't tell you the number now. Things have changed. They've rebuilt and one thing or another.
There's a Ramona building now. Is in the middle of the block.
Ramona building right in the middle of the block.
Right.
It seems to me that his office was west of that.
Okay, yes.
His office was west of that, but I couldn't tell you exactly where the office was located. Because at that time, we didn't, it was go and come. We didn't pay much attention to it, you know. Now, of course, if I knew what was coming, I would have watched that carefully.
Well, what do you think of this thing we're doing? Do you ever get a chance to go up the avenue and see?
Well, I think it's... I know Johnny Rodden now. I know him personally. We used to take him out when he was a boy and take him out fishing with him. You know. Johnny Rodden.
Yeah.
He runs Rodden's place. And I knew Jack Nelson. You know Jack. I don't think you knew Jack Nelson.
No.
He's in the real estate business right there at where McDonald and Huff was.
Yes.
He's in the real estate business there, I think. And before that, he run a garage up there in about 2517 or something, it's the matter. Jack Nelson's garage at that time.
Did you know Louis Unser?
Louis Unser, yes.
Yes.
I knew him very well.
What he...
He was the uncle of these Unsers that...
Yes, right. What did he do when he was in town? I understood he had a garage or something.
Well, he worked up there at that Manitou garage. You know, as you go up to Manitou, you know there's a garage on that. Mm-hmm. I'd say he worked there for a number of years. Mm-hmm. And then he worked for Bailey, up at Bailey's place.
Yes, okay.
He's Bailey's mechanic, you know.
Oh, okay.
Another fellow named Michael had done his upholstery work, you know.
Sure.
But, let's see, I don't know, just... Then he worked in a number of garages over town. He's a mechanic, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there was Joe Unser, he was the oldest boy, and then Louis, and then Jerry. Jerry was the father of these boys in New Mexico, Albuquerque, New Mexico, that are winning these races.
Mm-hmm.
That's Al Unser and Bobby Unser.
Well, on the 1st of July this year, 1st of July, 3 days before the race, we're going to have a racers reunion in Bancroft Park.
Oh,
and
you
we're
are?
We're going to try to have Unser Day and ask Louis Unser to come down, and the young Unsers, the racing Unsers, to come to the park, and then all the other race drivers bring their cars.
Well, say, that'd be nice. That'd be nice right there at Bancroft Park.
We're sort of saying, welcome back to Colorado City, Unsers, you know, this sort of thing.
So you see, I was there when that was a school, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I went to school there, and I represented the school in a spelling match. You know.
Yes, I remember on one of the other tapes we...
Huh?
You told that story
on one of
the tapes.
I told it, and I represented the school.
Yeah. Huh.
I and a girl named Ida Hazel, we represented the girl, and I represented the boys in the spelling contest.
Right. Did you ever hear I can't remember his name now, during the Thornburg Massacre and the Meeker Massacre that happened, I run across the name that there was a general that was here, and he said General Sum of Colorado City, that went up and helped the state put the problem down and try to solve the problem after the massacre at Meeker, Colorado.
Was from Colorado Springs?
Was from Colorado City.
Oh, from Colorado City.
Yes.
A general, you say?
Yes. And I'm trying to think of his name, and it's really threw me. He was a general later, I think, but in Frank Hall's history, it talked about this general, I want to say Miles, but that's not his name. But
there was a General Miles that had a fight with the Indians, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he won over the Indians. He understood Indian fighting. And
right.
But this
was man's address was given as Colorado City, and he was asked by the governor to go up and help after the Meeker Massacre at Thornburg to sit down with the Indians and try to make a peaceable settlement.
What tribe of Indians were they at that time?
Well, those were Utes.
Those were
the last of the Mountain Utes.
Mountain Utes, I know, but the Utes are not mountains. Utes.
They were playing
Indians.
Well, there were Plains and Mountain Utes, and this was a Mountain Ute.
A Mountain
tribe.
Ute. Now these Utes that used to come out here from the Plains, you know, they used to go up through Ute Pass.
Yes.
Ute Pass. They used to go up there and hunt in South Park.
Mm-hmm.
That was quite a hunting ground. That's where the Platte came down through, you know,
mm-hmm.
South Park.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a battle with the Cheyennes over that way back in the 40s, before mm-hmm. the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
And Kit Carson was there at this mm-hmm. at this battle they had. And so the chief of the Cheyennes spoke to Kit Carson. He said, "Kit," he said, "I'd like you to help me to drive the Utes out of here."
Mm-hmm.
He said, "No," he said, "I have friends among the Utes the same as I have among the Cheyennes." He says, "I'm neutral."
Mm-hmm.
He says, I'm watching this battle, but he says, I'm not taking any sides." He mm-hmm. says, "I have friends among the Utes the same as I have among you."
Mm-hmm.